This evening we have Dr. Kent Johnston from Salt Lake City, Utah, and his wife Sue. And Kent and Sue are going to share with us their very unique journey. We started out coaching them when they were in Southern California, and then as they moved to their dream practice in Salt Lake City, Utah. A couple of announcements I'd like to make. Of course, we do this call every month to promote our program up and selling our books, Playing Your A-Game, and the Blatchford Blueprint. Both of these books have stories of doctors who have done exceptionally well in our program and a lot of the methods they have used to do this. The proceeds for these two books go to the Juvenile Diabetic Research Foundation. We feel that's a disease that perhaps will be cured in our lifetime, and currently there is no cure for it, and so we give up our tiny part to help. So if you buy one of these books, you're helping out with that cause as well. I also want to mention another charitable cause that we were involved in. It's called Climb for a Cause, started by Danny Bobrow at American Dental Company, and we support two clinics for children, children's dentistry, one in Nepal and one in Guatemala. Actually, my daughter and I are scheduled to go there next summer, up to the one in Guatemala. This year, Climb for a Cause will be in Sun River, Oregon, and we're going to be climbing a mountain called the Middle Sister. Now, this one happens to be a half dome in Yosemite, and that's the group of us that made it up to the top of that. Now, we don't do a technical climb. It's a strenuous hike. It's about a 12-hour hike. This year, we'll go from 6,000 to 4,000 feet and back down about a 12-hour hike. Then we have some events in Sun River as well, so if you're interested in that. Every year, we also go ski with Kent and Sue at their lovely ski area in Park City, Utah, and that's the date for this next year's ski trip. So if you're interested in that, give us a call. So here's Dr. Kent Johnston at Park City, Utah, in one of his relaxing weekdays from his practice. He spends a lot of time skiing there, as you can imagine. I think he snowboards one day and skis the next. And this is the end of one of the days we had there in Park City last year, relaxing at the end of the day. And this is his great wife, Sue, who probably very responsible for making this whole thing happen. And she just returned from a trip to Denmark with their daughter, Brittany, excuse me. And, anyway, what we want to do is get started on this. So I would like, Kent, if you could just kind of describe your Blatchford journey in a few words to our listeners tonight. And by the way, we've muted all of the listeners tonight so that if you have questions, we'll put them in the chat box, and then I will just ask them. So if you have questions, we will ask them as we go along later on in our program tonight. So, Kent, it's up to you. Tell us a little bit how you met us. You were in Southern California practicing out in Palmdale. What were you looking for at that time? You had a very successful practice. I mean, as a matter of fact, you probably didn't know it, but I was a little nervous taking you on because your net was very good at the time.
Well, I remember back when we were interested in doing some main changes to our practice. We had gone through LVI, a few courses there, and had really gotten excited about taking our practice from more of a very general practice to more of a specialty restorative cosmetic kind of practice, but really had no idea how to make that happen. After reading a few things that you'd written, I realized that you probably had a philosophy that was closer to what we were trying to accomplish than anybody I knew of. So that's when we talked to you, investigated, and decided that you were the right coach for us to take the practice from where we were to where we wanted to be.
Speaking of LVI, you're currently an instructor there.
I am. And you've been an instructor there for about 12 years now. So.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful place.
Yeah, it's been great. But really, the interesting thing was when we first went and we learned how to do a lot of nice restorations, some indirect onlays that I'd never really done before in my practice, a lot of things that I really wanted to do, and some nice composites. I went back and really made less money because the dentistry took longer. It was a much more technical kind of dentistry. It just needed to be done differently than the way I was used to doing dentistry, and everything took longer, and I wasn't really charging enough, and we really made less, and that wasn't really what I wanted. So we needed help.
So you were actually stepped up the level of dentistry you're doing, which many dentists do, and then they don't know, or they're not able then to integrate that into their practice in a profitable manner.
And we were in Palmdale, California at the time, and it just didn't seem like a place where people were willing to pay for expensive dentistry. Big aerospace area, where everybody had Delta Dental insurance, and it just seemed like an unlikely place to try and do what we wanted to do. It was a very insurance-driven practice we were in, and so now we want to come in and try and convince people to do more expensive dentistry than they were doing, and it just seemed almost hopeless at the beginning.
Now, you actually took that to a non-insurance practice in Palmdale.
Yeah, we did, and, you know, it really, as it turned out, most of the big hurdles that we thought were so insurmountable, they were more in our own mind than anything. I would say one of the most important things that happened that allowed us to make those changes was that we took the whole team to a few meetings, and they really got excited. And I would say that was key for us. We had a fairly good-sized team at the time, probably six people. And instead of me dragging them along, they got excited, and they were the driving force for a lot of the changes in the practice, which made it a lot easier for me.
So you converted that to a non-insurance, well, when we say non-insurance, you still help them collect their insurance, but you certainly presented your treatment plans independent of insurance, and you were, if I remember right, you were not a provider for Delta, if I'm misquoting that.
Correct. We did. We dropped Delta.
Mm-hmm. So if it can be...
And that was hard. That was scary. But, yeah. We did it.
Sue, were you involved in the practice at that time?
Yeah, I was. I was coming in a couple days a week and kind of helping out in front wherever I was needed. So, I had a say in this whole consulting coaching program, and I was reluctant at first because we'd had some coaches in the past, and I hadn't felt like we'd benefited that much, but I felt like your philosophy was exactly where we wanted to go and how we felt about practicing dentistry. I liked the philosophy of practicing better dentistry and not doing what a lot of our colleagues were doing, where they were making their practices larger or adding more practices in other towns. And I felt like, I just didn't feel like that was the direction we wanted to go, that we just wanted to do better dentistry, better service. And
very good. Now, what caused you, or how'd you get this idea that you now had a successful practice in Palmdale? You were presenting and having accepted wonderful treatment plans. You were basically independent of Delta Dental, which is a large market share in California. You were doing well. Pretty much everything was paid for. Your practice is going well. How'd you get this idea to move to Park City?
Well, I would say that that was really coming from you and Carolyn, who gave us permission to dream a little bigger, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
We had to sit down and we did some long-term goals, some five-year goals, 10-year goals, and, just said, dream big. What would be the ideal? What would you do if all the obstacles were eliminated and you could do anything you wanted to do? And, you know, when we gave ourselves permission to think a little bigger than we had been thinking, we realized what we really wanted to do. We wanted to move back to Utah, where we were from. And if we could go anywhere in Utah, we wanted to move to Park City.
I remember you had some barriers. One, we didn't have a license, and I remember asking you, was there ever a time in your career where you didn't have a California license? And you explained, yes, when you first got out of school. I'm saying, Kent, you were an amateur then. Now you're a professional. You're an instructor at LVI. Do you think you might be able to pass the board? And after kind of laughing about it a little bit, you decided to try it. Of course, you passed flying colors. And what were some of the other obstacles that you came up with that you had to get by?
Seemed like every time we thought of it, there were more obstacles. There's a ton of dentists where we were practicing. and we knew more were coming in. The actual week that we opened our practice, three other dentists opened in Park City, and this is an area with 12 dentists. So adding four more is a pretty significant increase in dentists in the area.
Yes, 25% increase overnight.
Yeah, just, and you know, where to practice, and it just seemed like it was an impossible task. Giving up something that was all established and ready to go, and all we had to do was show up and give it up for something that just seemed like it would be an uphill struggle the whole way. I'm sure if we wouldn't have been involved in the coaching, we would have talked ourselves out of it just because it just seemed too hard.
Well, thank you. Let's talk about where you are now. Now you're in Park City, which for those of you listening is a wonderful ski resort in Utah. Not just a ski resort, it's a resort area in the summertime as well, and both Kent and Sue love to ride their bicycles, long-distance road races, mountain biking, skiing. Of course, their family is all there, and they built a beautiful home overlooking the valley. Tell us a little about your practice there in Park City now, and the transition that you actually made.
Well, you know, when we decided to sit down and think about where we wanted to be, we really first thought about what we wanted our life to be, even before we chose Park City. What would we really like our life to be? What would that be like if it could be ideal? And then once we'd sort of figured that out, then we tried to design a practice that fit it. We'd assumed when we made this transition that financially it would probably be, it'd cost us. We'd never make the kind of money we made in California. And we were willing to make that sacrifice to give up some money just to have the lifestyle we wanted. As it turns out, we've made more money here almost every year than we, our best year in California. So
I remember you shared with me, I think the second full year, you matched your best year in California.
Yeah, it ended up, you know, our big worries, the financial worries, the stress of moving, the unknown, they all, looking back, seem kind of silly, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, tell us about your practice now.
The practice now is the entire team is just my wife, Sue, and our daughter, Brittany. Brittany is a hygienist, so she is kind of an assistant hygienist. She helps me in the back with my assistant, does occasional cleanings that need to be done. Sue runs pretty much everything up front and does the bright smiles for patients and occasionally assists. So everybody pretty much does everything because we're such a small staff. So we went from a big 6 or 7 or even 8 person staff in California to 2 people in this Park City practice, and I'm only paying one of them. And that's really made a big difference. The number of days we work is much less. The amount of overhead is a fraction of what it was in California. And
tell us about your mix of treatment. What kind of treatment cases are you doing?
Well, we tend to just do bigger cases. I don't see kids. I don't do root canals. I don't see emergencies. I don't do much perio. I really just do restorative dentistry, either veneers or do a fair amount of posterior onlays and mix in a full mouth case every other month or so. But pretty much most of the treatment I'm doing are bigger cases. It's rare that we'll even do a single unit. Almost never that we do a filling.
How may I ask you? I'm sure a lot of our listeners would like to know. How do you market a practice that only does veneers, posterior onlays, and a regular stream of full mouth reconstruction cases? How do you bring in the patients for that?
We marketed fairly heavily the first few years we were here. And that was kind of a combination of some mailers that we send out, a few newspaper ads, magazine, full-page ads, things like that. We called ourselves Advanced Cosmetic Dentistry, and we were pretty well hidden. So I think in a lot of ways it discouraged a lot of patients that were maybe looking for inexpensive kind of treatment or just patch-up kind of stuff. We marketed Bright Smile quite a bit, and that seemed to be, for a year or so, kind of the entry point to our practice. Bright Smile cost $500 or $600 to be done, and there were dentists in our area that were doing whitening for free. So if we had somebody sitting in our chair that was willing to pay to have their teeth whitened when they could get it for free, then it was kind of a screening point.
Very good.
With a lot of new people, and so most of the people that were coming in were patients that didn't have a dentist, and it was a way to get them in and then talk to them about something more comprehensive, veneers.
Background. Sue, why don't you talk about your role a little bit with these new patients in your practice? What do you do with them? And
he had asked you a question. Could you repeat the question? She just stepped away for
yes.
a second.
Yes. Oh, Sue, what is your role, say, with a new patient once they're in the office?
Basically, it's a relationship role from the phone call, you know, first phone call when they make the appointment to when they come in, just kind of getting to know them, interviewing them, trying to build a relationship, and finding out what they're interested in, what motivates them, and so
mm-hmm.
we know what kind of treatment to present for them. Sometimes that takes a little bit of digging. Some people are real friendly and outgoing, and others are real kind of quiet and keep to themselves, so sometimes it's a little bit of a task. But we try to make that first visit, make them feel special and valued, and if they aren't, you know, they aren't ready for any kind of treatment, then that's okay. Then the next time we get them in, then, it seems like then they've warmed up to us and then they're ready.
Okay.
So I would say, just on the new patients, that after that first few years of marketing, we really haven't done any marketing for probably the last 3-4 years, even 4 years.
I think
so
that's right.
If anybody's in our office, they've been referred, and they have usually been referred for a specific thing, either anterior or a bite problem or something like that. So in a lot of ways, compared to our new patient experience when we were first starting out, the new patient experience is different now because they come in realizing that we're a different kind of practice, and the expectations are different. They're not just thinking they just came into any dental office. When we were first that was a much bigger hurdle to overcome. We had to somehow convince them that we were different than the guy next door.
So at this point, your reputation precedes them.
Yeah, seems to, correct.
Mm-hmm. So how many days a week are you working?
Two or three, usually. Three at the most, two sometimes. We try and work about 10 days a month.
Mm-hmm. I remember one time I asked you how many days you were working. I had a group of doctors there in Park City, and we visited your office, and you said, well, I try to work three. And one of the doctors said, what do you mean you try? And you said, well, unless I have a powder day. And then, of course, you'd call the patient and say, we have a problem. You have an appointment, and your doctor will be seeing tomorrow morning. What would you like to do? So your practice is really designed to support your lifestyle.
Yeah, that's not a joke, by the way. If there's a big powder day, we reschedule. They're not that
many months
during the year. That's why we're here. And to tell you the truth, if we didn't, patient probably wouldn't show up anyway. So.
Well, I think the inspirational part of your story is dreaming bigger, of actually implementing that dream and putting that in place. And you've created a life, at least a little glimpse that I get of it once a year when I come to visit, is absolutely revolves around your family, your scheme, your church, your community. And your dental practice is very important to you, and you are an excellent clinician. But you've put that together in a way that it really supports the rest of your life. And I observe that for the two of you, your life comes first, and the practice is definitely second.
in a way, I would kind of almost put it like this. I think that if the patients perceive you as being something different that they really can't get anywhere else, then they will accommodate your schedule.
I see. Very good.
So it's not like we don't see people when they need to be seen, or that, you know, because sometimes we're doing a case on Saturday afternoon, or, you know.
Mm-hmm. I know that.
We're willing to work around their schedule, but we find that, that, you know, if we're not in there that day, that they'll wait till we are. And occasionally, if they get their emergency work done somewhere else, they still tend to get the big stuff done by me, which I don't mind at all. We have a lot of dentists, or a lot of patients that see their regular dentist for cleanings and minor little stuff, and then they come see us if they want something big done.
Wonderful position to be in. I think it exemplifies what I have tried to get across to so many clients over the years, is that you really are in control. You have the power to change the way you live your life. I mean, it's you know, you get to do that according to my calculations and beliefs. You only get to do it on this planet once, and so, and it's a finite amount of time we have here. And I find that so many people, dentists especially, that put so much time into their practice, and I would have to say spinning their wheels. They're working real hard, but they often aren't doing the right things. And I'm sure, I mean, you've had contact with a lot of dentists through your work at LVI. What are some of the things that you see that dentists do that don't allow them to live the life that they would like to live?
Well, yeah, multiple offices, big giant staffs. I mean,
so high overhead.
Yeah, and high overhead. You know, we've been in this practice for 10 years, and I still don't have the need for a hygienist. I have Brittany that does maybe 15 cleanings a month or something, just kind of when they're needed. And so because we don't have that, we don't create a tremendous amount of busyness and calls and stuff going on in the practice.
Mm-hmm.
We really try and concentrate on maximizing our new patient visits so we get the most dentistry out of every patient. So instead of needing 30 or 40 new patients like I did in California, we need 8 or 10 in this practice. And, you know, with an overhead that's hovering around 40 instead of around 80, we need a lot less dentistry to be done to pay the overhead. So
it really proves a point that I've made many times, is that the overhead is a choice. You can have a 40% overhead, or you can have a 75 or 80% overhead. And of course, each one of those choices requires you to make different choices as far as your hours, the amount of time that you work, the amount of patients you have to treat, etc. I find also one of the things that bothers me, of course, is when doctors have extremely high overhead, it also causes them to make more compromises in the type of treatment that they do. Whereas you're in a position that you can prescribe the ideal treatment if you see it, and it's up to them to make a decision if they want you to be their dentist or not.
Yeah. I mean, and we spend a lot of time on a new patient visit. We spend a lot of time making sure that we do it right. We spend a lot of time practicing what we're going to say. We give each patient an hour. That's kind of key for us. We don't ever rush through that. And it's, you know, we want them feeling like they're the center of our universe while they're here. And that's not something they're likely to get anywhere else.
That's right. That's right. Let me ask you a couple things. You mentioned your team. It's Sue. Sue does the administrative work, everything out at the front desk. Brittany is a hygienist assistant?
An assistogenist.
Assistogenist. And so she does a combination of hygiene and assisting. Now, I'm sure that a lot of people would like to know, okay, well, who does all the other things in the office? You must need more people in that.
When we don't have a big hygiene program and we're seeing 8 to 10 new patients a month, and a typical day like today, I saw 4 people, you just don't need a lot of people.
Very good. I was talking to one of my clients who's actually in our book, also in our book, and I won't tell you who it is at this point, but today she has a $27,000 day. She has three team members, and she had four patients this afternoon. She goes to work at 11 today and works until 6 o'clock at night on Mondays. And she's in my mentor program, and she was mentoring one of my clients. And the new client, of course, wanted to know, how in the world can you do $27,000 to take an hour off to talk with her? And the deal is, you're going to start at 11. So that's it, because your team. All right, just talk about a couple things that you've done to increase your efficiency and your profit that you got from our program and that you've continued in this new practice.
Well, we talked about one, and it's key for us, and that's the new patient visit. We try to minimize the number of visits patients have to do and maximize the dentistry we get from each one. We take that seriously, and we're careful with it. Other than that, efficiency is kind of the last thing we're all about, because we just, you know, if I have a full arch case, I mean, I don't care if I just see that one patient and don't see anybody else that day, and we take off and go ride our bikes. We schedule a lot of time for every patient, and I'm there with them the whole time, doing all the dentistry and the temporaries usually and things like that. So
really the efficiency is the way you take care of the patients and present these large cases. Question is here, came in from someone. Explain a little bit how you do that new patient visit. What takes place?
We, first thing is that Sue will meet them at the front desk. They're usually the only person in the office, and so she'll sit down with them in our front room living area and just visit with them for however long that they seem comfortable. Sometimes the men don't want to visit at all, and sometimes the ladies like to visit a little longer. It's really just about relationships. She's talking about their dentistry and all that, which is important, but it's not going to impact all that much on how I'm going to present. It's much more important that by the time she's had that little visit, they're best friends. And
uh-huh,
then
uh-huh.
She brings them back and introduces them to me. I will take some photographs, and I will meet them. And really, that first visit, all I'm thinking about myself is relationship. We're asking questions. We're talking. We're visiting about their dental needs and stuff. But I'm just focusing on getting them to like me and making sure we have some sort of connection.
It doesn't sound like you spend a lot of time trying to educate them.
Well, not at all then. And then I'll take some digital photographs at that point, and then I'll disappear and load up the photos, and Sue or Brittany will take some x-rays of them at that point. And really, by the time I've loaded up the photos, I have a really good idea what this patient's going to need. Is it removing a bunch of amalgams? Is it a bite problem? Is it a cosmetic problem? I have that already pretty well in my mind, and I'm kind of developing a strategy on the things I'm going to say during the examination to make sure the patient understands whatever concern it is I want them to understand. So my next contact with them is going to be the clinical exam. We'll do blood pressure. We'll do a cancer screening exam, and we tell them we're doing all this, so they create some value in that. And then as I'm looking around, I'm describing very objectively and very much in detail things I see, a crack in a particular tooth of maybe 5 millimeters long, or part of the tooth looks like it may be rotten. I should check on the x-ray, or things like that to just raise some big flags in the patient's mind.
So really a pretty standard exam once you get going. What about financial arrangements? How do you do that?
Pretty much it is. And since when I go in, by the time I sit down to do the exam, I know what their treatment plan is going to cost. I know if it's going to be a $5,000 treatment plan or a $50,000 treatment plan. So before I've even started, I will probably have some little mention of something about the cost of modern dentistry and patients are, we're seeing patients spend up to $50,000 on their teeth anymore, which would have been unheard of. Not saying that theirs is $50,000, but I just kind of want them to know. Maybe
so when theirs comes in at $40,000, it seems like a bargain, doesn't it?
Yeah. Just so that that number's out there and that they know that we're talking about probably some expensive treatments. Anyway, is
question here from someone. Is that all done in one appointment?
90% of the time.
So in other words, it makes 90% of the time yes, but sometimes no.
Occasionally no. Like for instance, if it's a patient that we're going to maybe that really needs full mouth treatment, and we're going to have a lot more success if we can do a follow up appointment and have their significant other there with them.
Mm-hmm.
On the really large treatment plans, it's not always necessary, but it's usually necessary.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. This goes away from your practice a little bit, but it goes back to the big dream and the value of having a coach. When you first had the idea to move back to Utah, what were the things that helped? I mean, you say that, you give me some credit for that, but specifically, can you remember anything that I said or did that got you to pursue that dream? Because that really was your dream.
You just said you should do that. You can do it. I mean, that was more than anything. Yeah. Do it. Because, you know, you sit there in your little practice in Palmdale and you're successful, but you don't really know if it's just because you're the particular situation you find yourself in, or maybe you can be successful anywhere you went. Well, the truth is, of course you can be successful anywhere. Places just aren't that different, but we really needed to hear that, and that was great. And I don't know if you remember this, but in one specific area, when we first were looking up here, we were going to build a practice, and then I had an opportunity to go into an office with another dentist that I thought would have been way easier. I wouldn't have had to build my own practice. We could have just shared space. And I thought it was a terrific idea. And I called you up, and you, in no uncertain terms, I felt like I'd been spanked by the time that conversation was over. You told me, you're going to get this far pursuing your dream and then do something like that? You know, don't do it. And
well, I remember the conversation. I'd forgotten about it, but I do remember it now that... I think I did, was strong about it, but I really asked you to tell me what your dream was again.
Yeah,
and,
it was,
when you told me what the dream was, I said, now, does that sound like you're going to get there? And you said, no.
Yeah,
I'd forgotten about that.
You were very adamant about that, which was great, because as things unfolded with that particular situation, it would have been just a gigantic disaster. And, you know, I didn't see that. You saw it just immediately, so...
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, I did not foresee that that would be a disaster. But what I am able to do as a coach is to fly along at 35,000 feet, and when someone tells me that this is the dream, this is the direction that I want to go, and then I'm able to say, okay, does this move you towards that or move you away from that? And sometimes when we're right in the middle of it, we can't see that. Well, there's a great opportunity. I happen to work with two coaches myself in different parts of my business and life, and they see things I can't see, and they do it by asking the question, so that's good. Sue, anything you want to add to the value of coaching as far as how it helped you pursue this dream?
Well, I think it helped because I knew that you'd worked with a lot of dentists, you'd seen a lot of practices, and that you were, you know, you just had so much faith in Kent and his ability to do whatever he wanted to do. I felt like it gave me confidence to build his confidence, and I was also against him going in with that other dentist, and I just kept saying, you know, I think you need to do this on your own. I think you're being pushed into doing that because that's the right thing to do, and it just helped me to have the confidence that he could do whatever he wanted to do, because, you know, I didn't know, you know, for sure. It's kind of scary. Start all over again.
Well, you certainly have a wonderful life there in Park City now. You have all your grandchildren there with you. You have wonderful dental practice, which allows you to spend a lot of time pursuing a lot of other things that that you do in life, and I think it's important. Well, I want to thank you both for this your time tonight. I want to talk a little more, and I may have you back out and perhaps answer a couple questions. So I'd just like to mention our coaching program. We have three levels of program. We have the silver level for doctors who are just starting in practice. That's new doctors 0 to 5 years in practice. And we help them with all of those issues of startup practices. We have our gold level program, which is for doctors doing between 500 and 800,000. Then we have our platinum level for doctors doing over $800,000, a platinum level that I coach personally. The silver level and the gold level, I have some very good mentors who've been through our program that work with those doctors. Most of the time, I'm in the background, and I'm there available if needed. The silver program is, for new doctors, is $25,000. And we help them with issues like, where should I practice? You know, what town? Should I buy a practice? Should I start from scratch? If I buy a practice, what do I look for? What systems do I put in place? In other words, all of those things that we don't get in dental school. And it always amazes me when somebody's getting ready to spend $500,000 or so and find somebody to help them with that transition. And then the gold level is pretty much the same thing, and it's $35,000. And the platinum level is $47,000. So in other words, each of these programs, depending on how long you finance, it's going to be about the same as a $17 an hour dental assistant on a payment plan. So it's really not a major expense, and I know that doctors very often hire an additional assistant without even thinking about it, but hiring a coach is somewhat a different concept, I guess. So, Kent or Sue, what was the return on investment for you?
It's funny as you're saying that. That number, those numbers I'm thinking, that probably seems like a fortune to someone on the beginning thinking of spending that and going forward. But if you offered to give me $50,000 right now and take back all the coaching I have, I wouldn't let you give me $500,000 and take back all the coaching.
Oh, very good. Nobody's ever said it that way. That's very good.
It's kind of the same thing when I'm presenting a big treatment plan to patients, and all they're focused on is the money. After we're done, they're not even thinking about the money. And I can't think of a patient that I could buy my treatment back from them. That's more than they paid. But when you're beginning, all you're focused on is that money.
That's wonderful. That's great.
The best money we ever spent, as long as, you know, someone's willing to put forth some effort. It's not...
To do it, yes.
How much
and I point out, this is not a program that owning the manual is going to help you. You have to actually do the work. All right, so I guess the question then is, do you be proactive or you procrastinate? I mean, there are only two kinds of people in the world, the way I see it. There are those that act and those that procrastinate. And I have always been one to choose to act, and Kent and Sue certainly have too, because I know there are many, many dentists and spouses out there who are doing well but have thought about moving someplace else where they might want to have a different lifestyle and wait and wait and wait, or maybe they decide to wait until they retire. And I'm saying do it, and that's what I love to help doctors do. I have a lot of clients that, or prospects rather, want to ask their spouse or their accountant or their team. And the way I see it, I advise you, again, the same way, is that, you know, do you ask your spouse, your accountant, or the rest of your team if you need to hire another dental assistant? So is that really what you want to do? So I think it's a decision that the leader needs to make, and I think everybody needs to answer this question. You know, how long have you known that you want to raise your income or have more time off, or how long have you been thinking about making a move and haven't done something about it? Of course, the longer that is, the more you tend to procrastinate. So leads right into this question. Will 2010 or the next 12 months be a banner year for you? And with doctors feeling the pinch of the economy, our business is having a banner year. At the same time, there are a lot of dentists out there who are feeling the effect of this in an adverse way. And I point out that most of our clients are having a record year. So what's next for you? Well, I think the thing to look at is, you know, the business principles that will work in any economy. Now, Kent, you have gone through the time when this economy was a boom time, and you've also are doing very well in what's a slow economy there in Park City, because I was there in February, and vacancy rates were a little higher in the hotels and resorts, and yet you're still doing well.
It doesn't seem to be the major factor for us.
No.
In fact, I thought that the economy would affect us way more than it has. So it's, but I, we have had to work a little harder, I think, on making.
Well, I think that's right. One of the things I pointed out is your competitors are certainly working harder to have your patients spend money in their establishments rather than in your dental office. So we do have to change what we're doing. There's no question about it. And I think if you make those changes, and we've proven that, that you can do very well. So if you want to contact us, there's our contact information. And if you contact us, there is a free slide that you can, a free CD, rather, that you can get from us. So I want to thank Elton for being on this call tonight, and thank you so much, Kent and Sue.
You bet.
Good night.
Good night.